Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Internet world, and welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and I want to say thank you once again for taking time out of your busy life to join me on the broadcast. Today is Monday, September 7th. Happy Labor Day, everyone. Actually, Labor Day is aptly titled, because I have to labor today. I have to work today. It's my holiday to work at the hospital. I've been working all weekend. But for most of us, it is the official last day of summer, if you will, and a day of rest for most of us, a little backyard barbecue, a little time at the lake or the beach. It's actually 14 days from today, the official start of the fall season. This fall season, I have a very special writing project that I'm getting ready to embark on. I'll be writing a brand new book, and this book is a very dramatic, very intense book, and of course, it's about Iran. It's the story of Dr. Ardeshir Husseinpour. He was one of Iran's top scientists earlier in 2007, and he died under very mysterious circumstances. And his sister, Mabi Husseinpour, has been busy since his death to tell the truth about what happened to him. And she believes that he was assassinated. And of course, anything that happens in the Islamic Republic of Iran, when you don't do exactly what they like, and you're somehow involved in the government in some way or another, usually you end up in the river or somewhere else, because the government kills, it murders, it's oppressive. I have written many, many books about my Iranian friends who live under a dictatorship government, and they have no freedoms. I have written books about Iranian refugees who've had to leave their homeland because of no freedom in Iran. And so it is my honor and my privilege to write this very special book later on this fall. Probably sometime in October, I'll begin the official task. But just recently, I finished a very important article about this book, and I shared it on my Cross in the Desert website. Let me tell you a little bit about it, and then what I want to do is I want to read the article to you and give you the paperback short version of essentially what this book is going to be about. I have a friend, her name is Mabi Husseinpour. She is a very powerful human rights activist. She lives right here in Los Angeles. She migrated here and has been living here about 4 years. And of course, she is very active within the Iranian community in California. In Los Angeles, it's one of the largest Iranian communities in the United States. And so she has been busy since she's lived here, speaking out about her brother's case. and speaking out about regime change in Iran. She's very, very dedicated to the people of Iran. She's not forgotten them, even though she lives here in the prosperous, beautiful, free United States. One of the obstacles that Mabi has encountered since she started talking about her brother's death is the lack, the very lack of media support. Because a lot of the media, the BBC, Voice of America, a lot of them are too intertwined and connected with the Iranian regime. And for political correctness and fear of saying something bad about Iran, they have failed to run this story. They're afraid to run this story. In some senses, they don't run this story because of connections with NIAC, the Iranian-American coalition in Washington, which has been suspected of a long time of working with the Iranian regime, even though they claim to represent Iran and talk about issues with Iran and try to help the Iranians. There are really many, many Iranians, myself included, and people in Washington that believe NIAC is nothing more than a voice and a puppet for the dictatorship government in Iran. So there has been opposition for Mabi to tell this story. She has met with me for the last 2 months, and we've discussed a lot about her brother, about the circumstances. We are still meeting, and we are talking about her brother's young childhood in Iran, his interests, his achievements, his marriage. And so this is going to be a very important book, a book that will be a voice for her brother's case. So what I want to do now, with the time remaining in my broadcast this morning, I want to share with you this very important article and give you some ideas and an introduction to the book I'm about to write with Mabi. And this book, again, is going to be distributed literally all over. Mabi works very hard. She is, like I mentioned, a human rights activist. She does a live television broadcast from her home in Los Angeles, and part of that broadcast is beamed via satellite right into Iran. So she's speaking to the people of Iran as well. So this is a very hardworking, dedicated lady for human rights and regime change in Iran. So this morning what I want to do now, I want to read to you this article, and this will give you an idea of just what this book is going to be about. The title of the book and the title of the article is A Lion in Persia, The Assassination of Dr. Ardashir Husseinpour. The bright rays of sunrise gently peeked across the horizon in the city of Shiraz, Iran. Sarah awoke early, as was her custom, and grabbed her cell phone from off of the table next to her bed. She speed dialed her husband's number and then patiently waited for him to pick up. No answer. Her call went into voicemail. Sarah dialed once again, now sitting up in bed, anxious for her husband to answer. Ardashir should have been up by now, preparing to dress and head out to his class at the university to teach. He had a very predictable routine, and Sarah knew it by heart. They had only been married for just 25 days after being in love for a year and a half. Her teacher and class professor had gone from being her university sweetheart to her young and handsome husband. Once again, no answer. Her second call went into voicemail. By now, Sarah was feeling frustrated and a little worried. If she had been with him at their apartment the night before, calling him on the cell phone would have been unnecessary. Ardashir had insisted that she remain at home with her sick father, and Sarah reluctantly agreed. As she threw on some clothes in a haste, Sarah continued calling her husband, and still there was no answer. Well, maybe he overslept, or maybe there was problems with the cell phone or the Wi-Fi. Their new apartment was in disarray. Many items still remained unpacked, and sleeping on the floor had become a routine until they both managed to find the time to purchase a new bed to sleep on. The phone continued to go into voicemail. Sarah was now fully dressed. As she stood in front of the mirror to adjust her hijab, she could feel her heart racing in her chest. She remembered back to the last conversation that they had together. Ardashir mentioned that he was supposed to meet with two men to discuss some scientific issues. The meeting would take place later that night at their apartment. She grabbed her purse and class books and paused at the front door, taking a deep breath. It was only a 10-minute drive from her father's house to their apartment. Sarah phoned for a taxi. Well, but she decided to go first to the university. Ardashir would be most certainly there for the early morning 8 a.m. class. His students would be waiting inside for him. Arriving at the university, Sarah quickly entered through the front door. She immediately noticed that the students had gathered in the hallway, impatiently waiting for Adashir's arrival. And by the way, Ardashir never was late for class. This was highly unusual. Sweat rolled down Sarah's cheeks. Sarah quickly entered through the front door. She immediately noticed, as I mentioned, the students waiting. Fear gripped her heart. She began running toward their apartment that was only 10 minutes away from the university. Upon arriving, she nervously inserted the key into the lock of the front door. Ardashir! Ardashir! She nervously cried out as she continued to twist the key into the lock. Well, the door finally opened, and immediately Sarah was greeted with a blast of hot air directly in her face. The first thing she noticed was the roar of the furnace running on its highest setting. Sprawled out in front of the bedroom door was Ardashir, covered up to his neck in a blanket. It was highly unusual for Ardashir to be sleeping with a blanket over himself and the furnace turned up on high. He disliked the heat and never slept with a blanket. Sarah raced over to her husband. He must have overslept and didn't hear his cell phone ringing. Sarah knelt down beside him and began shaking his body with her right hand. "Honey, honey, wake up. It's me, Ardashir, Ardashir." Ardashir didn't move. He was unresponsive. Sarah violently shook him once again. "Ardashir, Ardashir, please wake up. Wake up." For the last 14 years, since his mysterious death on January 15th, 2007, Mabi Hasanpour, has been a powerful voice for her brother, refusing to accept the government's official version that Ardashir's death was accidental. The government concluded that his death was a result of gas poisoning, and then they invented a number of possible scenarios. If gas poisoning wasn't to be believed, they said, well, it was heart disease, or a jealous lover and a murder, and finally, an assassination plot conceived by Mossad and carried out by Israeli spies. Mabi refuses to accept any of these scenarios. Instead, she has been busy launching a campaign to get to the truth of her brother's death out to the media. But, as I mentioned to you before, she has run into a brick wall of fear and political correctness. The BBC, well, they never returned any one of her emails. And Voice of America Persian rejected her story for the fear of consequences from the Iranian regime. Since Mabi is an activist for regime change in Iran and a loyal supporter of the Pahlavi dynasty, the media has boycotted her story. They are opposed to women like Mabi who are dedicated to the former Shah. The media understands that accusing Iran of assassinating their top scientists strikes at the heart of the Islamic Republic, exposing them as a cruel and oppressive government. The world cannot, according to them, and must not know the real story of what goes on behind the Iron Curtain of the Islamic Republic of Iran. In October of 2010, Mabi traveled from Iran to the American Embassy in Nairobi, Kenya. She stayed there for 55 days, late into the month of December, pleading with the security officers to contact Washington and put pressure on Iran. She explained the tragic story of how she believed her brother was assassinated because he refused to enrich the uranium stockpile to 20%, which far exceeded the legal limits. And here's what Mabi said to the security officers. Please contact the State Department and tell them my story. Iran can't be trusted with their nuclear ambition, Mabi insisted. If the United States puts more sanctions on the government, it could lead to another revolution, and the people can overthrow this evil regime. Unfortunately, Mabi's desperate pleas fell on deaf ears. Instead of the Obama administration putting more tough sanctions on Iran, they had empowered and enriched the mullahs with more than $150 billion in sanction relief money in a July 2015 nuclear deal. This is called appeasement. No confrontation, appeasement. And just like the Carter administration years ago abandoned the Shah at a critical time, and just like the Obama administration when the people of Iran during the 2009 presidential election were crying out for help and support from the United States, Obama turned a deaf ear then too. That was really the breaking point for the people of Iran. And in 2015 with this nuclear deal, they celebrated. And this deal would eventually allow the evil regime to develop nuclear weapons and be a very serious threat in the Middle East. This was the situation left for Mabi in 2010. She anxiously to the security officers at the American embassy, she pleaded with them. They did their job by sending the message to the State Department, but the Obama administration decided, no, we're not going to do this. And instead, they trusted Iran with a dangerous nuclear deal in 2015. I want to take us back now a little bit to the beginning of the birth of Ardashir. Dr. Ardashir Houssampour was born on December 21st, 1962, in Tehran during the Yalda celebration, which is the longest night of the year. Iran was a prosperous nation at that time under the leadership of the Shah, Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, who had recently implemented important reforms known as the White Revolution. One such reform, granting women the right to vote. In 1962, Iran was a very secular and free culture without the oppressive religious restrictions that were to come later. Women were not required to wear a veil when going out publicly, and the sexes were not segregated in 1962. Life under the Shah really was a celebration of diversity and freedom. Ardashir's name had been specifically chosen by his father, Nasrallah, to commemorate national pride. The name Ardashir, literally in Persian, means holy king. Ardashir's parents wanted to instill on their children the richness of Persian history, pushing back the influence of Islam from the 7th century. Their family book was The Book of Kings, written by the famous Persian poet Ferdowsi, who had preserved the Persian language, history, and mythology from being erased by the Arabs. From his early childhood, at the age of 7, Ardashir had aspirations already at that young age of becoming a scientist. He loved nature and was really concerned about the environment and the diseases that were cutting short the lifespan of his people. At the time of the revolution in 1978, Ardashir was 16 years old and busy pursuing his scientific endeavors. His mind was not occupied with Khomeini and his vision for a new Iran. Instead, he was concentrating on mathematics and physics. He had a vision to transform the environment of Iran and construct a pipe system for irrigation, which would change the desert into a forest ecosystem. Ardashir's early life was filled with outstanding achievements. By the age of 19, he had earned the highest degree in martial arts, the Black Belt. While serving in the army, he received an award for braveness and leadership. After his tour of duty in the war with Iraq, Ardashir continued to pursue his educational career by earning 4 degrees in electronics, engineering, computer, and metallurgy. He went on to earn a Master of Science degree in physics and his PhD in atomic physics. His outstanding achievements enabled him to become one of Iran's top nuclear scientists specializing in uranium enrichment. From the time he was recognized as one of Iran's top nuclear scientists, he had been under government scrutiny and surveillance. Mabi, which is, again, Ardashir's sister, explains the various reasons that led to his assassination in 2007. Quote, they, the government, was very jealous of his intellect. Ardashir was a handsome man, and for that reason alone, the mullahs hated him. They would always complain about him wearing sunglasses, believing that it would tempt women. They complained about his shirt sleeves being too high up on his arms, revealing too much skin. This, of course, is because of the extreme dress code in Iran. However, the number one reason for the government assassinating him was because of his opposition to the Bushehr nuclear site. Ardashir was invited to tour this site, spoke out against its usefulness to the government. It's not useful, he said. It's not that important. It's too old and too expensive and not good for national interest. Ardashir's objection enraged the government. When he refused to enrich the uranium stockpile to 20%, which was way beyond the legal limit, this act of defiance sealed his fate. The government hated his moral character. His morality, kindness, and honesty put him at odds with all of the mullahs. One of his favorite rituals before teaching class was to quote from the Persian poet Ferdowsi. He never quoted from the Quran, and in the eyes of the government, this act alone was treasonous. With tears in her eyes from the years of pain and anguish, Mabi explains what she believed happened on the night of his assassination on January 15, 2007. Ardashir received a call while speaking with his wife, Sarah, and was instructed to meet with some important officials alone later on at his apartment. He urged his wife to stay behind and take care of her ailing father. Ardashir then drove alone back home. Neighbors reported seeing him pacing back and forth in his balcony at 5 a.m., waiting anxiously for this meeting. Mabi believes sometime later, when Ardashir retired for the night, the government agents climbed atop his apartment building and dropped poisonous pellets down through the chimney. They waited a few minutes and then entered his apartment, turned up the heater, and laid a blanket across his body. They wanted to give the appearance that Ardashir fell asleep and died as a result of gas poisoning from a malfunction with the heater. However, when the heater was later inspected, it was found to be functioning perfectly. Excuse me. It's been 10 years since Mabi traveled to Nairobi and urged the officers at the American Embassy to contact the Obama administration about her brother. She warned them not to trust Iran, but her plea fell on deaf ears. Instead, they forged ahead, as I mentioned, with a disastrous nuclear deal in 2015 and appeased the mullahs with over $150 billion in sanctions relief money, which they used, of course, to finance their terrorism. Now, what is the present situation as I speak to you? Vice President Joe Biden is running for president against Donald Trump. Of course, he is a very strong advocate for defunding the police, for a socialist transformation of this country, for raising taxes, for giving illegal aliens rights, health insurance, jobs that are people here need, but most importantly, Joe Biden is a carryover from the nuclear deal. If, God forbid, he would become president, all of those things would happen, but once again, he would resurrect the nuclear deal with the various nations and with Iran, and he would appease the mullahs. Already, NIAC is supporting Joe Biden, as well as the Islamic Republic of Iran. If he becomes president, it will be a disastrous return to appeasing the mullahs of Iran. And what that means is that the sanctions go away, the government gets more money, and they will develop a nuclear weapon. It's a disaster. Mabi has dedicated her life to tell the world the truth about what she really believes happened to her brother. She is a passionate human rights activist that is a powerful voice for the plight of all Iranians. She wants regime change. There are so many outlets, so many Iranian groups that want to reform the regime. And of course, you cannot reform terrorists. She is for regime change, as I am also. This article in this book is very, very important. Ardashir must not be forgotten. His story and his legacy must be told to every media outlet around the world. His death must not be in vain. He stood brave and strong against the dictatorship government in Iran to prevent them from developing nuclear weapons. We must do the same. As I think about this article, and I think about the book that will cover many more details, this is a very groundbreaking book for me. It was a few years ago in 2015 that I began writing the story of Rehane Jabari, an innocent young Iranian girl who was attacked and raped by a former government official. And because of his position, Rehane went to prison, and the regime tried to change her mind and say, he didn't try to rape me, to preserve his reputation. Rehane refused. For 7 years, she was tortured and finally executed on October 25th, 2014. This was a very important book in support of Rehane Jabari and all women in Iran who cry rape. In the same way, this book, A Lion in Persia, The Assassination of Dr. Ardashir Houssainpour, is a very important book the world needs to hear. And so I'm joining forces with Mabi, Ardashir's sister, and together we are going to tell the truth about the assassination of her brother more than 13 years ago. It's very important. He stood for the truth. He stood up against Iran developing nuclear weapons. We must also do the same, and it's so important that this fall, this election, that we cast a vote for a man who has supported the Iranian people since he became president, and that's Donald Trump. To vote for Joe Biden is to betray Ardashir. To vote for Joe Biden is a return to the nuclear deal. So I pray that you will read this article and share this broadcast and article with all of your friends, and let's support Mabi, and let's support for a regime change. God bless you. I will see you again on Thursday on The Cross in the Desert.